The Leopard, the Mafia, and Us by Robert Royal. Nuncet in Ora Mortis Nostrae. Amen. The daily recital of the rosary was over. For half an hour, the steady voice of the prince had recalled the glorious and the sorrowful mysteries. For half an hour, other voices had interwoven a lilting hum from which, now and again, would chime some unlikely word. Love, virginity, death. So begins the celebrated modern Italian novel, Illinois Gattopardo. In English, The Leopard, though the animal in question is accurately translated the ocelot. But that name wouldn't have adequately conveyed the grandeur of the protagonist, Prince Don Fabrizio Salina, an imposing Sicilian nobleman, as the island is being invaded in the 1860s and absorbed into the emerging nation of Italy. That the author, himself the Prince Giuseppe Tomasi di Lampedusa, thought to place the passing of the old monarchic order and birth of a new one amid those large realities in the Ave, however, is noteworthy. I know of no other significant work of fiction that starts in a similar way. And it's even more surprising in that Lampedusa wasn't an especially Catholic writer, though he was an admirer of novelists like Graham Greene and, in complex ways, several Christian currents in history. The greatest Italian Catholic novel, and perhaps the greatest Catholic novel ever, is Alessandro Manzoni's The Betrothed, a book on the order of war and peace. But it's just one indication of the subtle richness that has made The Leopard a classic that it almost imperceptibly frames earthiness and world historical events in light of eternity, via what to many might seem just the most conventional of Catholic devotions. The prince is a passionate man with a mistress, a streak of religious skepticism, and a manner that intimidates people. But he also has a shadowy Catholic conscience in the family chaplain, Father Peroni, who's deferential, but, at times, a true spiritual counselor. Netflix has just brought out a 6-part adaptation of the novel, which does not start with the rosary or bring to life the large human questions. Like most modern stories, it overdoes sex and romantic intrigues, and it even fails to capture the great beauties of Sicily. Better to watch the older Visconti film, at half the running time, with Burt Lancaster, a real-life leopard, as the prince. Normally, I defer to noted film critic 1B Minor for such judgments, but I've been living with this novel since my early Italian studies, many moons ago. It describes a period like ours in some respects, when the whole way of life of a people is being threatened by progress. The line most often cited from the book is pronounced by the prince's reckless, romantic nephew, Tancredi, as he's going off to join the revolutionaries. If we want everything to stay as it is, everything will have to change. I've never been quite sure about what that means, and neither is the prince. It may simply mean that Tancredi, an intoxicated with radical politics, just doesn't know what he's talking about. Because things are certainly not the same after the change in regime. Even today, some still lament that radical change. I was driving in Palermo once with a Sicilian art historian on Via della Liberta and was surprised that, like the prince, this sophisticated man, too, deplored the conquerors from the mainland a century and a half earlier. He claimed that they had substituted deep personal loyalty to a man, king, with shallow adherence to abstractions. Like Liberta, I asked. Yes, he said. The prince appears to have much deeper historical intuitions than his wild nephew. The Sicilians never want to improve for the simple reason that they think themselves perfect. Their vanity is stronger than their misery. Do you really think that you're the first who has hoped to canaliize Sicily into the flow of universal history? I wonder how many Muslim imams, how many of King Roger's knights, how many Swabian scribes, how many Angevin barons, how many jurists of the most Catholic king have conceived the same fine folly? And who knows now what happened to them all? But he, too, has misunderstood. His way of life is doomed. Some readers regard the prince as an ideal portrait of lost nobility. Others that Lampedusa is gently poking fun at the prince's limited historical understanding. But whichever it is, he hasn't taken the full measure of what radical political changes can do to everyday life. It's an odd thing for a Catholic living in America, Anno Domini 2025, but I feel great affinity with this Sicilian tale. Human understanding of history's direction is always imperfect. We often confuse what's happening with what we want to be happening. The arc of history bends towards justice. Really? On what planet? In the West, we're not losing a hereditary aristocracy, as the Sicilians did, but we sense a kind of democratic nobility slipping away. The way our once virtuous and independent and mostly Christian people lived relatively good human lives in strong social networks, despite the false claims of progressive radicals. Our history is marked with many evils, like all human things, as well as much nonsense and naivete. Too many of us still feel that America will essentially survive any and all religious and political and cultural changes, despite radical challenges. Let's hope, but nothing human lasts forever. And our belief that we're not vulnerable to perennial human and historical failings makes us even more vulnerable. Ironically, Lampedusa got his name from the island of Lampedusa, which Pope Francis visited right after his election because it's close to Africa and the place through which large numbers of mostly Muslim migrants enter Europe. When Garibaldi's men invaded Sicily, at least it was Italians engaging other Italians. And even that wrought great havoc. In fact, the mafia arose in large part because the new regime couldn't keep order as the old nobles had. Worth remembering because that arc of history won't fix our disorders. We need to rethink deeply and fast, what will?